The Action Drunkies.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Action Drunkies. I'm Rob, the Cinema Drunkie.
And I am Mac, the All-Star.
And today we have a very special guest. He's an action movie aficionado and a certified Andy Sidaris expert. Please welcome to the show, Mr. Todd Gaines.
Hey, I appreciate that, guys, so much. Thank you for having me on. I'm super excited to talk everything Andy Sidaris.
Great. We're glad to have you on here. We can't thank you enough for appearing. But first, you know, for those who may not know, who may be unfamiliar with you, please tell our audience, who is Todd Gaines?
All right, so Todd Gaines, also known as RTG, also known as The Real Todd Gaines. You might know me from a little site called Letterboxd, or you might know me as a reviewer from Bulletproof Action. I've been on Bulletproof Action for a little over a year now. Been on Letterboxd for 7 years. You can find me also on the Bulletproof podcast most of the time. And I'm also doing the rounds for different podcasts. So that's pretty much me, the me that you need to know about Todd. I've just been doing my thing, man, for a lot of years and just excited to talk to you guys a little bit. And let's just have some fun.
Absolutely.
Do the damn thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, so when did you first discover the action genre, Todd?
Probably when I could learn how to read those HBO guides and I could see what was, you know, did the movie have violence? Did it have nudity, strong sexual content? You know, so I was a quick learner of the HBO guide, of the Cinemax guide. Also, being a child of divorce, which I guess that's a lot of kids these days, but not when I was growing up, I'd go to my dad's house a lot on the weekends. And how we would bond would be we would go to this place called Turtles Records and Tapes, okay? And we would he would just let me pick out whatever. And, you know, of course, him and my mom really didn't see eye to eye. So I was like, all right, let's pick out everything that's rated R. I would look on the back and, you know, if it was rated R, yeah, let's get this. Yeah, let's get this. But yeah, let's get that. And most of the time, man, it was, you know, movies like Navy SEALs, just stuff like that. You know, Navy SEALs, like one of the coolest things ever was like going to see T2 at the theater when I was just a kid and calling my grandma. I was like, hey, grandma, I'm not going to be home. Okay. Dad's taking me to a movie, you know, being Terminator 2, which was really cool. So, and I guess that love of movies grew. I mean, even before that, I used to watch TBS all the time and watch the Braves. But then after the Braves, you would have action movies come on. So it'd be like the Dirty Dozen, Enter the Dragon, the Dirty Dozen, The Next Mission. It's like they would play the same movies, The Magnificent Seven. So I was constantly just exposed to action movies. And just throughout the years, it's just one of the genres that I really like.
That's great. That's great. I vividly remember seeing Terminator 2 myself in the theater with my dad and my sister and just being complete blown away. So, like, yeah, I share your sentiments. So now to go into a final question, what is it about the action genre that you love so much?
Well, I like to see things get blown up. I like movies that have that get blown up, that people get blown up. I like the blood. I like the violence. I love it when you add a little bit of nudity in the movie as well. I mean, what is there not to like? Yeah, exactly. I mean, what is there not to like about an action movie? It's just the excitement you get from watching, you know, cheering for certain people to live, cheering for certain people to die. Just the overall experience of the adrenaline rush that you get when you watch an action movie. And I'm glad I still have that rush, you know. I mean, yeah. Years ago, I mean, you're a kid, like anything could pretty much keep your attention. And now that you're an adult and that movie still keeps your attention or a new action movie comes on, you're like, hey, this is pretty good. I mean, anything to, I like all movies, man. I mean, I really do. I mean, there's a lot of genres that I could talk about forever, but I mean, action movies are very special to my heart. I think it's like that bond when I was a kid, like with my dad, and I think that was like a really cool time, and those are memories that I still take with me today. So that's probably one of the reasons why I'm still like an action guy. I mean, my dad's been gone for a long time, but I still like cherish those memories I have as a child with him. So I think that's probably the biggest reason that I'm like a huge action fan. It's just those really cool childhood memories that I get to relive. Like when I watch a good action movie, I might just think about him for a minute and like, hey, yeah, we've probably been watching this if he's still around. So yeah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Beautifully said, man. Beautifully
thank you. Thank said. You. Thank you, man. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, so now to let the audience know, if they want to get in contact with you, see what you're up to.
Oh, yes.
Where can we find you on social media?
Let's see. Real Todd Gaines on Twitter. You could find me there. If you ever want to know the story about Real Todd Gaines, it's when I was on Letterboxd. You can find me on Letterboxd. Just search Todd Gaines. When I was first on there and kind of making like my splash or whatever, there was a fake Todd Gaines account. And so somebody made a fake Todd Gaines. Don't ask me why. I guess they were just jealous because my reviews were getting attention or something. I don't know. And so from then on that, I was like, we have a fucking imposter. You know, what's going on? It's like Letterboxd, remove this guy. And I have no reason why. I don't know what happened. But everybody started getting on Twitter, started yelling like, there's a fake Todd Gaines. It's like, I can't believe you would like review this movie or whatever. I'm like, that's not me. And so I just started tagging everything Real Todd Gaines. And so that's where the Real Todd Gaines came from. And then, yeah, I mean, those are the two main. I think I have an Instagram account. It's Todd Gaines Talks. Also have a YouTube account, which might be Todd Gaines Talks as well. It's pretty much I've kind of taken a break from YouTube reviews ever since like this COVID stuff happened, and really because I would make a cool video and then they would try to say that they would try to demonetize it, or even though I didn't have enough followers to get monetized because I was using like trailers and stuff, and so I'm like whatever. So I might start making videos again, but I think my true calling would be coming on podcasts and just writing reviews and all that good stuff. So that's where you guys can find me. And if you ever, yeah, I mean, I'm really pretty much open to talking to anybody, especially like on Twitter DMs, you know, hit me on DM. We'll talk about anything. I'm a pretty nice guy. So that's about it.
Just to, you know, get it out the way. You know, yeah. I usually say just save this kind of stuff for the end, but I gotta say you're one of the best dudes out there, dude. I gotta admit.
I really appreciate that, man. I think like this action Twitter community is the best community on Twitter, and it's really cool connecting with like fellow people like Michael Scott, like you guys, like our friend Larry that did y'all's Hard Target.
Yeah.
It's really cool just getting everybody together and really, I mean, that's just like, I'm like, wow. Okay. This person has had a letterbox, had no clue, you know, I mean, and then everybody just comes together and we talk movies and I'm just glad that I could lead a little of my expertise into this, because I definitely have a little bit of Andy knowledge. So it'd be a lot of fun.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So with that being said, let's go into our main topic of discussion. That is 1987's Hard Ticket to Hawaii. Now, okay. So this film is widely known, you know, everybody knows Hard Ticket to Hawaii. This film is one of the most, I don't say legendary, but most iconic films of the 80s. But for reasons that I think are kind of, you know, just, this is why I really wanted to talk about. I wanted to get into Andy himself, Andy Sidaris, who is the filmmaker behind this movie. And I that's why I really wanted to have you in this discussion, not sure. Just about to talk about the film, but to talk about Andy and himself for a brief bit.
Okay.
Andy is, a lot of people, you know, whether they know or they don't know, Andy Sidaris was pioneer in television, sports television, to be exact. He was the program director on ABC.
Monday Night Football and the Olympics, two things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I also think he did Wild World of Sports as well.
Yep.
Which,
oh, man, Wild World of Sports.
Yeah, which I believe he won an Emmy for, correct?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's one of those things, and just think about it, like you're filming sports, you're filming this action, so you have to be right there in the middle to get the shot. So that shows that Andy, you know, was a pretty talented guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's why what I wanted to discuss about Andy, because the legacy of this film and all his films, like, lead people to believe that he was kind of this naive, oblivious filmmaker, the bad filmmaker, if you will. And Hard Ticket to Hawaii and a lot of his films appear on numerous amounts of lists that put it as like one of the best bad movies ever made. And what I wanted to discuss is that Andy, when you look at his career and you look at Andy, like he comes off as a smart guy. Like, especially like when you take into account his career in television, like Andy's a smart guy. I don't think Andy's stupid. So like when you look at this film, like, you know, and you look at the stuff that happens, there's a lot of self-awareness in it. And then in a lot of his movies. And what I wanted to ask you is, do you think that, you know, a lot of people are correcting Andy that he was a bad filmmaker, or was Andy a secret genius who knew what he was doing and made these films like exactly how he wanted them to be? You know, people are just like looking at the cheesiness of it all and being like, oh, this is bad filmmaking. And it's like, oh, this is exactly how he wanted it to be. Which one do you think it is?
Oh, he's a genius, no doubt. Now, someone who's a hack would be like Amir Shirvan, who did Samurai Cop. I don't know if you guys ever seen that, ever talked about Samurai Cop. A director like Amir Shirvan, even though I have talked many hours about Samurai Cop. Now, that's a hack. Now, Andy, on the other hand, Andy, you know, it's like, he's like, hey, I like Hawaii. I like beautiful women. Hey, I love Playmates. Let's make a movie that features all the stuff I like. And you got to remember, too, like his movies are going to be a family ordeal. His wife, Arlene, is going to be a producer. His son, Christian, or you can call him, he's either known as Christian Sedaris or Drew Sedaris, was always an assistant director in his films. And later in life, he would actually direct a couple of, like, quote, Andy Sedaris films. So Andy is definitely, in my opinion, a genius, because he, you know, he just made movies the way he wanted to make them. And if that involved, you know, exploding toys or, you know, hot women driving Jeeps and like little camo outfits and taking the time to get into a jacuzzi, I mean, and then always having that champagne toast at the end, so be it, man. I mean, because if you look at how his films are shot, it's not like shady. Like, it's not like really, you know, like bad scenes. Like in Hard Ticket to Hawaii, there's a little bit of audio issues, like some additional dialogue recording issues that you can tell that, okay, you know, that's not the best. But as far as the action sequences themselves are actually, in my opinion, well did. I mean, it's as good as you can do if you throw a blow up doll in the air and make it explode, you know, so.
Yeah, we will definitely get into that one in a bit. We definitely got to get into that.
And just like a quick second, like there, like for me, like how I got into Andy was, you guys know Joe Bob Briggs, you know, Joe Bob, you know, now is like the horror guy on Shudder or whatever. But back in the day, he was on the Movie Channel and I didn't have the Movie Channel, but I could watch it through the squiggly lines. And so I would turn it on. I think it's on Saturday nights. And Joe Bob would do movies just like this. He had Andy Sedaris on. He had the actresses on. And that's where I really like fell in love with Andy Sedaris, was watching these movies late at night on, like, I think it was Friday or Saturday nights. There was a Joe Bob show. And that's why I love Joe Bob Briggs. That's why I love Andy Sedaris. And I just thought I'd throw that out before we got into any more discussion.
No. I agree. I love Joe Bob. I definitely agree with you. I personally think that Andy is a genius. Like, you know, people will look at his films and be like, terrible filmmaker. It's like, no, Andy knew exactly what he was doing. There's a true self-awareness of him. He absolutely went into every single one of his movies, especially this one, with an idea in his mind. It's like, I had this discussion previously on my buddy Michael Cook's show, Hit Rewind. We were talking about the action films of 1985, and we discussed Commando. Commando is my all-time favorite action movie, and we were discussing Commando in comparison to in Rambo First Blood Part 2, in that Rambo First Blood Part 2, you know, it's a film I love, but it takes itself incredibly serious, and it gets into politics and stuff, and it really dates the film, whereas something like Commando is obviously done with tongue-in-cheek and real comic book theatrics, if you will.
Right.
And that's why that film perseveres more. Like, I see a lot of people love Rambo First Blood Part 2, but Commando comes up a lot because, you know, you don't have to worry about deadly seriousness. Everything is fun. Like, Schwarzenegger made sure that when he did a movie, he had, you know, you had fun when you watched his movies. And Andy, I think, thought with the same logic. When you, like, you know, he just wanted you to have a damn good time. And, like, not, he didn't want to take himself too seriously, just sitting there pondering life. You know, just come into the theater, sit down, and just forget about life's problems and just enjoy the explosions and the beautiful women. Nice shit, like you said, champagne toast at the end. Everybody smiling, the sunset. You know, and that was Andy. So I just wanted to discuss that about Andy a bit, because I feel like a lot of people look at Andy as like, oh, he's like some sort of, like, the same way they look at like Tommy Wiseau and Neil Breen. And it's like, well, no.
Oh, no, no.
No.
For myself, like, I'm not a pro like you guys. I might know a little more than novice, but I was watching this with my wife, and I was like, you know, for the year this came out, this has to be genius. Because there's flaws, but the movie checks the boxes. Beautiful women, explosions, fights, boats, somewhat of fast cars. A decent story that you can follow. So for me, I would think that's genius level stuff, because you're checking the boxes. I'm pretty sure at that time when this came out, everybody liked it, and they probably made decent money for them.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's still making decent money for them.
You know? Yeah, I think you can have an Andy Sedaris convention or this movie's always, well, not right now, but when the world gets back to normal, yeah, I'm sure it will be screened. I know, like the Alamo Draft House likes to screen this movie. I mean, and this is always the Andy movie that they go to screen, even though if you watch a lot of Andy Sedaris movies, really, in my opinion, like him as a filmmaker, because he keeps making the same damn movie over and over and over again. He actually, I mean, the later movies are really, really good, especially when you start throwing in some big name actors, Eric Estrada, Pat Morita. You start getting like the big time guests. Then, I mean, they're really solid flicks that action lovers, especially if you like hot naked women, you can't go wrong when watching the Andy Sedaris collection.
Oh, so, yeah. But what does that tell you? That's a genius. Make what you like. Yeah, that's, man, what he likes. Like, you know what I mean? Make what you like, and people will like enjoy it. And so you're killing two birds with one stone. You're making people happy, and you're living your dream.
That's what you call reading the room. Like, Andy knew who his audience was, and, you know, he knew what to give them. That's why you continuously have people returning to, you know, not just this film, but his films overall. Like, that's how you're able to get, like, all his films released on Blu-ray. You know, I know they released all the Blu-rays to every single one of his films, like, over the course of, like, a couple of months, like, you know, Hard Ticket to Hawaii, Malibu Express, which, of course, I gotta note that if you check Todd on Twitter, that his Twitter default pick is from Malibu Express.
That is true. And if you look at my letterbox, my profile page lists my four favorite films. There's four Andy Sedaris films, and the backdrop banner is the Hard Ticket to Hawaii So yeah. and then my Twitter biopic is, I think, Pat Morita might be in it, and Donna Spear and Cynthia Brimhall. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, it's from another Andy Sedaris flick, and yeah, everything I have is pretty much Andy Sedaris. So
yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah. I love it. I love it. Especially, you know, making films for people, like, you know, he knows his audience and he made his films exactly, you know, he kind of, like, you know, set them up, he cut them, you know. I'm sorry, I've been drinking a bit, so I'm trying to get my point across. I'll cut
that's okay. That's okay. And if you look to the
I've been
the
smoking light, a bit, bro.
That's all right too. If you look at like the lightheartedness too of this film and the way Andy always lets like the ladies kind of be in charge and always kind of like be in control of the situation. I mean, you have these guys doing, you know, they get to hook up with them, but it's always on the ladies' terms. And yes. So Andy was definitely like ahead of his time. Like you cannot call Andy Sedaris a sexist or whatever those key words that we use in 2020. I'm not really familiar with them, but you know, all the words they like to call certain people. Andy was always put like, you know, he's always had strong women in his films. And so he was doing that a long before it became the quote woke thing to do. So bravo, Andy Sedaris, man.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, now that you say that, I guess we could go into the discussion about the movie overall. As the plot line reads, in Hawaii, an undercover DEA agent and her civilian friend stumble upon a drug trafficking operation and have to enlist the help of all their colleagues, friends, to go after the vicious drug kingpin. As the film opens, it opens with Donna Spears' character, Donna, and Ron Moss, who plays Rowdy. They're having a good time on the yacht, you know, boats. And like you said, you know, like the women really are in charge because he's like, oh, like, you shouldn't be out there. That's not good for a woman. You could come with me. And she's like, no, this is my job and I'm going to do it. And she basically rips the towel off him and said, yeah, we're going to do this right now, you know. But she's like, I'm taking charge of this situation. And he's kind of like, oh, my God, you know. And that shows right there that, yes, the women are in charge. I could imagine people try to call Andy a sexist because of amounts of nudity. But it's not, and he doesn't portray it in a way that's, what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, it is gratuitous, but it's not in a mean way at all.
Yes.
There's no like exploitation. It is gratuitous, or we'll just call it beautiful. But just for everybody listening, you know, Donna Spear, she was because Andy loved his playmates. So she's from March 84, guys. She was 5'6", and if anybody's out there wondering, she's 37 double D, 24, 35.
Your birthday month,
there you go. There you go. There you go.
The year you was born, she was a playmate.
And
right,
another like trivia for people that care about Hard Ticket to Hawaii. In the later movies, it was Donna and Nicole, who was played by Roberta Vasquez. Roberta Vasquez was actually Andy's first choice for Hard Ticket to Hawaii, but she was pregnant at the time, so she could not take the role. I'm not sure if it was for the Donna part or for the Taryn part, but these movies would have been a little different if Roberta Vasquez was starred in this one. So
I definitely agree. Donna Spear really brings something to the role. Like, you know, she brings, you know, sensuality, but also a clear-headed aggressiveness. She's basically the hero of the film, you know. Like, I love the scene where after they get attacked by Seth's men who are looking for the diamonds, and she grabs her gun and she runs out and shoots Seth. You son of a bitch! Bang! Right in the face.
Blast him in the face with the deuce deuce.
Yeah. You know, That's like, yeah, this is a strong woman, you know what I'm saying?
And what's up with Seth Spear's snakes, too? Because, my God, he saw that
snake. Was so far.
Yeah, I mean, oh. He just started screaming, man. Like, his spear. What's up with that?
Okay, let's now that you bring it up, let's just talk about the snake. Now, this is what I talk about. This is what I was talking about earlier about Andy's self-awareness. Like, Andy obviously knows what he's doing. Now, the snake is a special snake in the fact that it's toxic. It's filled with what was the line exactly?
It's like cancer from lab rats or something that. Yeah.
It's infested with toxic poisons from cancer-infested rats.
There you go.
Now, that's a snake.
Right. No. So see, the thing is like everybody knows it's like. That's not how cancer works. You know what I'm saying?
Just put it in a snake. It'd be all right.
You can't just have cancer-infested rats just infect a snake with toxins. You know, and that's not how cancer works. But
how did it happen? Did the snake eat the rats, and then it got cancer?
That's what I'm saying. Like how exactly? Is this, you know, did this transpire, you know? So this is to me, this is Andy having fun. It's just like, you know, Andy's just like, you know, this is silly, you know. I'm not just going to sit there and come up with any kind of complex reason why this snake is dangerous, you know, and like, oh, what's big? I'm not going to use AIDS. I use cancer, you know, so like, yeah, it's infected by, you know, from cancer-infested rats, you know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, you know, this is just all a bit of fun, you know. And that snake, it caused so much trouble throughout the film. Yeah. Oh, God, that snake is like to me, that snake is like the actual villain of the film, you think about it.
I've done another podcast where I talked about this movie, and I was asked who was the MVP of the film, and I said the snake. So,
yeah. It is. The snake is definitely the MVP of the film. You hit the nail right on the head with that one. Oh yeah, but we got a little ahead of ourselves. I wanted to ask you, Todd, where did you first see this movie, and what were your initial thoughts after you had seen it?
You know, I really can't tell you. It has to be from the Joe Bob Briggs, just a night coming on TV. I know later there was always these DVDs, like Andy Sedaris, like all 12 of the, you know. So I know I've seen it then. I really can't tell you the first time that I've seen Hard Ticket to Hawaii, but because I think when I first think about Andy, I think about the movies just a little bit later, but I'm guessing I saw it probably when I was in high school, and I was like, yes, this is good. I mean, but to me, they were all good because they were made by Andy, and so to me, like Hard Ticket to Y, Picasso Trigger, Do or Die, Hard Hunted, just all of them kind of just ran together for me. And then when I realized, hey, there's like, you know, Donna and Nicole, Donna and Taryn. And then like, I kind of just went back and started watching, you know, the Donna and Taryn films. And I mean, there's always, I mean, I've never not liked this movie. Like, I don't know if this is Andy's best movie, but it's definitely the one that's the most fun to talk about for sure. Because we have so much cool things we can, you know, discuss.
Yeah. This is. I would say, out of all his films, this is probably his most famous, iconic, if you will, of his films. Like all his films, I enjoy all his films. Like I love Picasso Trigger. I love Do or Die. I love Guns too.
Guns. I just like Edie Brimhall singing like the Guns theme. Guns.
Yes. But this is the one that people always, like, when you think Andy Sedaris, everyone thinks Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
And it's all like movie types of people. You know, like people like me and you who like love action movies, and and I guess I have a rep for someone who likes bad films, you know, but anyway, like all, like, I guess your quote film Twitter, even these like pretentious little fucks, they seem to like this movie as well. So like we can all like come together and like Hard Ticket. And I'm like, hey guys, if you like Hard Ticket, give these other Andy films a chance too. And they're like, oh no, it's just always just Hard Ticket for them. It's like they don't even want to watch anymore. But maybe they just get enough Andy that they're okay, we're cool. But I mean everybody's entitled to their own opinion, and definitely a Hard Ticket is by far his most famous.
Yeah. I mean, definitely.
Andy, well, I think where I was personally when I remember watching this movie was a week ago when my brother over here was like, hey, our guest, this is what he wants to talk about. And, you know, I was like, cool, I'll watch it because I'll watch anything. I'll give everything a shot. And disclaimer, you should buy it if it's out on DVD, yeah. People listening, spend that money. Oh. I was trying to catch it quick, so I caught it on YouTube. And I am not going to front. At first, I was like, wait a minute. What's going on here? We've got titties within the first couple of minutes.
It's okay. one minute, 30 seconds. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And then there was a snake, and I was like, wait a minute. What is going on here? And I watched the whole thing, and by the end of it, like I said, there's definitely some things I would probably be like, yo, this is bananas. But the movie on the whole was good. I was like, wow, this ain't too bad.
Yep. Right, you like Andy's movies even when the girls are not naked. You know?
Yes,
you do not fast forward. And that's the difference between Andy and a lot of these other quote B directors or whatever, is you never want to hit a fast forward button in an Andy Sedaris film.
No, right. No, absolutely not. It's like the difference between him and like a Jim Wynorski. Yeah, you know, like you said, like, you know, he loved his playmates, you know, and he made sure to show them gloriously, but they're not exploited.
No,
they're
not, yeah.
It's not like, you don't feel embarrassed, but like, in contrast to something like, I did an article where I compared Skyscraper with Dwayne Johnson with Skyscraper.
Oh, Lord.
With Anna Nicole Smith, and, I truly felt that she was exploited in that film, that woman should not have been in front of a camera throughout that entire production, because she was obviously not in her right state of mind. She was obviously like inebriated throughout the entire production, and they were taking advantage of her.
Oh no, yeah, yeah. The thing about this Anna being on drugs, Donna Spear was actually on drugs hard during Hard Ticket to Hawaii. But through the help of Andy Sedaris and Arlene Sedaris, she was able to get sober after this film, and she's been sober ever since. And so, and they, because she said that she did not think she did good in this film because she was drunk off her ass. But afterwards, she got help, and she's been sober, and she's been a sober advocate for many years now. So I see her like on Instagram, always talking about the sobriety, and so. Andy Sedaris is not only a filmmaker, but he probably saved Donna Spear's life.
You know, see, that's what I mean. Like, and that's just beautiful to see. Like, you know, whereas people will probably look at Todd. Todd.
They'll look at me like that, too. It's all good.
We'll look at Andy like, oh, he's taking advantage of women. And he's really not. You know what I'm saying? Like, as you said, he probably saved her life. So,
right.
That's why I wanted to bring up Andy in the beginning, you know what I'm saying? And so I'm glad we were able to discuss that.
Yeah, he was a great guy. He really was. He was a great guy. And I think we've covered just that he was probably just a decent human being. And in a world in Hollywood, Holly Sleaze, whatever, Andy was one of the good guys, no doubt. Yeah.
And I definitely respect Andy, and I love Andy, and it's just a, you know, it's one of the great shames and tragedies that you know passed away. You know, he's no longer with us. But I definitely wanted to get into more like a diverse discussion of the film, particularly like the actors and the story.
Right.
But we'll get into it. You had Donna Spear, of course, who played Donna, and Hope Marie Carlton, who played Taryn, Ron Moss, who played Rowdy, who's probably most famous for, more famous now, I would say, for his appearance on What soap opera was it?
The Bold and the Beautiful.
Yes, thank you.
The Bold and the Beautiful.
Yes. Of course, he became famous for his clips played on The Soup on E! You know, if anybody remembers that show, where his character had a conflict with another character named Rick. It was a clip that became meme-worthy, where he got into conflict with this character, Rick. And I think he said his Rick, like, maybe 20 times during, like, a two-minute clip. Look, Rick, I'm not gonna take any more of your crap, Rick. You know, hey, Rick, I'm sorry you lost, Rick. And then, like, he knocks him over, like, a bridge. And he's like, Rick, no, Rick. And, like, that's probably, like, where he's most known to, like, modern audiences for. Like, you know, everybody knows him for what was that band he was in? He was in a band.
He was in a band.
Yeah, he was in a band.
We'll call it the Ron Moss Band.
Just yeah,
the
yeah.
Ron Moss Band.
Right. I know that the one song they did that Baby Come Back. Baby Come Back.
The band was called Player. P-L-A-Y-R, Player.
You also have Harold Diamond, who's most known for being Rambo's opponent in the beginning of Rambo 3. He was the stick fighter opponent of Rambo in the beginning of Rambo 3 in the big stick fight that Rambo has.
He does have a great ponytail. Harold Diamond's ponytail and hard.
I get Ken vibes from like Street Fighter from him.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
He was also in you mentioned Amir Shervin earlier, Todd.
Yep.
He was also in Killing American Style, one of Amir Shervin's films.
Yes. Have you ever seen that?
I have not. I've seen clips of it, but I have not seen the whole thing.
And I think Jim Brown's actually in that too, the football player turned actor. It's kind of like a hostage, like people take over a house, like a home invasion type of film. Just kind of a hot mess. But I've always liked Harold Diamond because he's actually like sort of a good fighter. I mean, he's actually like a real martial artist. And in one of these movies that he did, either this or Picasso Trigger, like he accidentally like hurt the guy that he was fighting. Like, I guess he was kicking him too hard. So, it is what it is, right? Man. Yeah, he was hard Harold Diamond. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't have any of that. That's no good. You can't be hurting stuntmen or actors on the show. That's no good. The cast is, you know, I don't know if you could say that, you know, I mean like the male cast, like the women are front and center throughout the whole thing, particularly Donna Spear and Hope Marie Carlton and Cynthia Brimhall as Edie. The men are kind of like, they're there, but they're pushed to the sidelines. And I think that's, you know, it's appropriate, you know, for the kind of story that Andy is telling in the film.
Right.
You kind of just, you know, yeah. Get to the back, guys. You know, it's the women's show. It's particularly, I love...
Maybe you got to have decent guy roles in that. And then these guys did a good job, like, helping keep everything together.
Yeah. But they're definitely sidelined, you know, because it's really Donna and Terrence's story. I love that scene where they initially find a mini helicopter with diamonds in it, and then the bad guys approach and shit, and you know, one pulls ninja stars out of her boots, and the other one pulls nunchucks out of her boots. Yeah, the nunchucks, which she then just chucks, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's not how nunchucks works, honey, but it's great. It all adds to the fun, you know. I would have loved to have seen her use the nunchucks and, you know, exactly how they're supposed to be used.
Actually, but, like nunchucks.
yeah, totally. But it's all part of the fun. It's all part of the fun, you know.
I think Ron Moss's character, because in each almost every Andy Sedaris film, you're going to have an Abilene boy. think you had Cody Abilene and Malibu Express. And they all share the same characteristic. A, they're a ladies' man, but B, they can't shoot a gun like a one with actual real bullets.
Nothing.
Worth a shit. They all have terrible aim. And the kind of the running joke in this one is Ron Moss's expertise with a bazooka. Like, he can blow anything up with a bazooka. And if you notice, the damage the bazooka does is so different each time. Like, it might blow somebody sky high, or blow somebody out a window, or just take a snake's head off. I mean, each time that the damage the bazooka does is different. But at least he can shoot the bazooka. And what's hilarious is, you know, he's shooting his gun like five or six times. And then Harold Diamond, who plays Jade, he just gets up one time and shoots the guy. And Ron's like, well, I would eventually have got him. And he's like, shut up, keep practicing. So they're always having that little they're kind of
and
there.
That goes to sorry to cut you off.
Oh, no, go
ahead. Saying about putting the ladies first, because who actually connects when they're firing their firearms? The ladies, like, you know what I mean.
Also, spoilers for this film. Like, we should have noted. I always forget to note that this, you know, these conversations are full spoilers. But I love how at the end where they confront the main villain,
Mr. Chan or whatever.
Yeah. I always remember him as the dude that runs the suit store from Highlander 2.
There you go.
He Rowdy pulls out the German pistol, and then Donna pulls out the fucking the big Magnum. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, she's the one pulling out the big gun while Rowdy has the little gun and Mr. Chan. Mr. Chan, the most Chinese-looking guy I've ever seen, is the main villain, which they kind of explain that, saying that his mom was Chinese and his dad was British, but obviously he got his dad's looks, so and his dad's accent as well, so, you know, whatever.
Right. That's how you explain that the way. But that's what I'm talking about. That's the beauty of Andy, you know. The woman is basically the big gun in the situation, where she's pulling out the biggest gun as opposed to the guy. He pulls out this, you know, like, you know, this respectable pistol. But she just pulls out this giant, you know, this gun that Dirty Harry would approve of. Like, yeah, that's a good gun. And that's the beauty of the whole situation, you know.
Oh, yeah. And, like, right before we get to this, you know, we had that big climactic fight with Donna and Seth. Seth, played by, of course, Rodrigo Oberton, who would go on to be in, like, 75 other Andy Sedaris movies. But that motherfucker would not die in this film. And, like, the beginning when Donna's in the closet and he's just, like, hacking at it. I mean, I thought Halloween. That's what gave me mine. It's like he's totally ripping off Halloween right here. And, like, what? She shoots him with a bow. I don't know. She shoots him with something. Like, he just doesn't die. And then finally, what? The snake takes him out. The snake bites him and falls to the ground. But, I mean, my God, that guy just kept getting up. He was like the Energizer Bunny, man. He was going.
Like, die already.
Yeah. Like, she shoots him with, like, a fucking harpoon. And, he just would not fucking die, this guy.
And you were wondering, like, where, like, after this, I mean, before this, you're like, where's Rowdy? Because they show a picture of him riding on, like a dirt bike or whatever. He takes off. And he's just riding around. It's like, okay, so he's just riding around. Then all of a sudden, he just comes crashing through, you know, Donna and Taryn's place, you know, with his bike, you know, to get
at
that
night.
Final. Yeah, to get
at
night.
In the daytime.
I mean, I guess he ran out. I guess he just kept riding until the gas was running low and just.
You're in Hawaii. You got to check out the views, huh?
Yeah, he might have stopped and looked at a. He might have stopped for a luau or stopped at a look at a volcano or maybe to play some frisbee, because that's the thing we've kind of forgot to talk about was that.
Yeah. That was weird.
It's the signature, in my opinion, like a signature Andy Sedaris movie is when you're playing frisbee with a guy named Shades. And you kill him with a killer frisbee.
That was pretty dope, though. I'm not gonna front.
We might as well get into it. Like, you know, the action sequences in this film were like iconic. Not just a big climactic scene, or as we were talking about, the Seth versus Donna in the house, and then the snake shows up, and then Rowdy comes in and he blows the snake's head off with the bazooka. As someone who, we write about action movies and we discuss action movies, and it's hard to discuss action over and over again, but like this film is something that's special, you know, in the way like Andy conveys his action sequences. You know, in a sequence where Rowdy blows up a bad guy and his blow up doll with a bazooka.
And the bad guy was skateboarding. Name, Skater. Yeah. And his name was Skater.
Hey.
Yeah.
Like skateboarding with a blow up doll. I will say, I feel like a lot of people got grazed with bullets in this movie. Like when the skater boy busts off a shot from, I don't know what gun that was. And my man sitting there like, it just went in a little bit. I was like, did he fire a musket at him then? Like, what's going on right now?
Well, the bullet hit the tire and it magically ricocheted. It must have bounced in. But here you go. You had a flat tire, but then afterwards the tire, you must have had some fix-a-flat or something because it instantly went back up.
Flats, baby.
But a funny story about the skater character. There's an older Sedaris movie called Seven, which was made in like 1979, which actually featured a character, that same character in there. And there's a scene where Big Bill Smith is riding in a car with a blow-up doll, and Skater sees that blow-up doll. So I think it's a little bit of a continuation from Seven. Yeah, so I think that's where he got his little fascination with the blow-up doll. Was from an earlier Sedaris film. Yeah.
Because I'm not going to lie, I was like, wait a minute. He's got a blow-up doll skating, hiding the gun. All right, I see where you're going with this.
And, you know,
the blow-up doll didn't even do nothing. You blew it up. Like,
and his buddy, his the other guy was named Earring. So, I mean, what names for bad guys? Skater, Earring, and Shades.
Shades. Man. I ain't gonna front, though. If I was Shades' boss, I might have to fire him, because who takes frisbee breaks?
Dude, but he was an extreme frisbee player. I mean, his frisbee skills, I mean, if they had X Games back then and they had the frisbee throwing, Shades would have been a gold medalist for sure.
Mm-hmm. He took that shit very seriously to the point where, like, you know, it caused his death. It
caused him his death, yep, he did.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you play frisbee with a random you don't know.
He got set up because old Colleen with the nice ass was, you know, he would play frisbee with her every day. And, you know, good for the team for doing that, you know, recon to know, hey, he's going to play with her. And old Ron Moss, he's like, I got this. And he goes and talks to her and they jog. And then he tells her to get lost. But he tells her she's got a nice ass. And she's like, you too, Pilgrim, you know, just that. And then Shades is like, oh, well, this, you know, Shades is a competitive guy. And, you know, they start throwing that frisbee, and then somehow, because they did that recon, they knew that Shades had a black frisbee. So when they could switch to frisbees, he switched to frisbees and killed Shades. And hey, that was one of the hero moments of the film.
I love how, like, after he kills Shades with frisbee, like, he gives that fist pump, like, yeah,
I did it.
that little celebration, like, yeah.
that fist pump was all through the film with Don and Taryn kind of like high-fiving each other in their little commando camouflage uniforms. And there's a lot of, too, in this film, references to James Bond. I mean, if you want to play a drinking game, take a shot or take whatever every time someone mentions James Bond. And I think they kind of wanted, Andy wanted this to be sort of a James Bond film, even though James Bond dressed in a tuxedo, his leading ladies, they dressed in cutoffs and boots and no bras. But hey, that's okay, because they're doing the same thing, saving the world, right?
Absolutely. You put it perfectly right there. Yeah, they did mention Bond quite a bit. I rewatched it for the purposes of this, discussion. And I was like, yeah, like, you know, the mentions of Sean Connery, who unfortunately has, by the
2020 took my boy.
Yeah, took Sean Connery, you know, that's unfortunate. But yeah, you know, you kind of get the sense that, you know, he was working on that same kind of logic, kind of Bond, beautiful women, explosions and all that stuff. It's except that Andy Sidaris went a little bit further and had the women naked.
Well, I also got like the Charlie's Angel vibes.
Yeah.
A few times when they were like on the phone talking to the guys. Yeah, we knew who they were talking to, but how they just huddled around the phone and.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I got a question for Mac. Mac, when you were first watching this and you noticed the bartender named Michelle, did you think something was off with her or with Michelle?
I actually was going to bring that up a little while ago. I was going to say for that error, for him to be so forward-thinking and have a transgender there. Listen, I watched this with my wife because I was like, hey, babe, sorry, you're stuck. I got to watch this for the show. And she was like, oh, that's a dude. And I was like, yeah, man, that's a dude. So props to him for being forward-thinking like that. Like, you know what I mean? Not even actually, worrying about it.
Yeah, he went and hired a professional right. Cross dresser, who actually competed in like pageants and stuff. So he actually went out and cast someone that.
I mean, she did at first look like a chick, and then as the cameras like on her, I'm like, oh no, that's a dude, bro.
Especially when he we'll just call her Michelle, shared a scene with Patty Cakes, and Patty Cakes was talking about how you got to keep your. You got to exercise to keep those puppies looking right. And Michelle just kind of nods. Uh-huh, honey. Uh-huh. So that was another cool scene. Just another good example, just how to sneak in a little bit of nudity in there to make sure at least your playmates get naked at least once. So,
right.
Yeah. Totally.
Andy was a man before his time. Andy was just a great guy. And I think if he was still alive today, he would just still be a great guy. And I wish he would have kept making movies, man, because we need Andy Sedaris in our world. We need Andy Sedaris movies when we just want to just forget about stuff. I mean, because you got to admit, man, we've been through a lot this year, and We're still going through it, and no matter how somebody feels, man, I mean, an Andy Sedaris film could really, maybe that's where they need to get cheered up, man. I mean, if you're down, if you're, you know, if you feel hopeless, you know, just take some time and watch an Andy Sedaris film, and just maybe just turn your mind off and laugh, or just enjoy that hour and a half, and you might have to get back to the real world later, but Andy's films are just an escape, man, and we are just we're better with Andy. And I mean, I miss him all the time. I wish he was here, but we have his films to talk about and get to have an awesome podcast about him. So at least we still have that. So just RIP, Mr. Sedaris. I know you're probably banging some super model / playmate right now up there in the big blue heavenly sky, but sir, we salute you. We really do. You are my hero. You, Joe Bob Briggs. Or if there wasn't an Andy Sedaris, if there wasn't a Joe Bob Briggs, there would not be a real Todd Gaines. I mean, that's just I'll just put that out there right now.
Action Drunkies.